Welcome to Let's Chat Parenting, a podcast for parents who want to be in the know. My name is Jared Jones. I'm the director of student ministries at Orangewood Church, located in Orlando, Florida. And on today's episode, we have Matt and Ryan Cassada here to talk about depression in adolescence. Matt and Ryan are good friends of mine, and we were really, really thankful that they were able to come in, and the content that they gave us was so, so great for how things to look out for with parenting and things to be aware of, but also just practical tips on how to go about engaging with students, engaging with your teenagers, even in the midst of something as kind of scary and confusing as depression. Ryan and Matt did a seminar for some parents in Orangewood a week ago. And we thought the content was really great, and we just wanted to get it out to as many people as possible. So awesome. We're really glad you guys are here today.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
Awesome. So you guys talked about depression, specifically in teenagers, but it really had a lot of application, I think, to all ages of life, and specifically how to parent with depression. And so, Ryan, you kind of started off by just getting talking about some preliminary kind of discussions or maybe
some false perceptions, yeah. Or just some things to bring to attention or to people's attention about depression. But one of the big things that they taught us during our master's is depression, you know, it's kind of like the common cold of mental health issues. So it's the most common thing that brings people into our counseling offices, that and anxiety. And just like a cold, it can have varying degrees. So at times it's just, you know, a little bit of situational depression, and at other times it can get more severe. So there's a broad range of what depression can look like. So it's common, there's a broad range, and additionally, I think a lot of people have this association with depression that it's too much sadness or letting something affect you too much, you know, you feel too deeply.
Right.
And in actuality, it's not so much the sadness, but the inability to be with sadness, the inability to feel those hard, kind of painful feelings. So when we can't feel them, we obviously don't know how to cope with them very well.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great. I love that it's not that it's sadness, but it's an inability to actually feel sadness.
Exactly. Have you seen Inside Out?
Yeah.
So it's, God gave us all these different emotions. When they're working well, when we know how to pay attention to them, they should be our inner teachers. But at times we get stuck when we don't know what to do with fear, sadness, pain, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's so interesting. I think I see that in as a student minister all the time with somewhere around like middle school students. Just, it's not that they're really sad. It's not that they're really happy. They're just kind of blah. And there's just there's signs of that all over the place, I guess. So that's cool.
And I'll even jump in just as a side note. When I teach my psychology classes, one of the things I say is emotions aren't just something that Disney created to manipulate us to make money. But there's even a physiological, physical aspect to emotions. And there are chemicals that are moving and neurotransmitters and just even the way that our brains function, there's a physical component to feelings. So it's not just you're weak if you have feelings and you're just the sappy ones of us have that, but we all have those and we're all physically wired to experience them. And we'll talk, I guess, more about this, but in many ways, that's what allows us as humans to connect. We are wired in so many ways to connect with others, to empathize, to put ourselves in the shoes of others and understand what they're going through. And our ability to feel emotions is one of the ways that we are able to connect with others.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So as Ryan's mentioning the great Disney movie, I think that's just a worthwhile little side note.
Tidbit.
Yeah. That's awesome. You heard it here. Disney did not invent emotions. God did. Hey, Matt, you talked about how it's important at the beginning of any discussion on depression to first talk about like what health looks like. Could you kind of just rehash what you kind of said with that?
Yeah, so, and I think that it's worthwhile to have the story to root this all to. So what does health look like? But even another question asked with that is, what is it that we were made for? Hmm. And so I guess this is a Christian podcast, so we can talk about the Bible.
Yeah.
So we will go to the Genesis creation narrative. I just love the imagery of this. It talks about in the cool of the night, God comes to walk with Adam and Eve. And this is shortly after they have eaten of the fruit, realize their nakedness, and in shame, they hide, which shame causes us to hide. Mm. But I just love the picture of God coming in the cool of the night. When I think about that, I think about especially being here in Orlando, where it's just oppressively hot. What it feels like as the sun begins to go down, and it's the time that you roll down your windows and you feel the heat of the day wearing off. So it's a picture of, when I think about it, of those moments in life where things just line up and you know this is just a good moment. This is a right moment. Hmm. This feels like what I'm made for. So think about visiting a beautiful place. We went and visited friends in Colorado last fall, and we hiked up to the highest point of the Rocky Mountains. And as the sun was setting, we rolled down the windows, and we had music on, and none of us talked for about 5 minutes because it was just one of those like, man, there are not words to capture this. And even I found myself thinking, gosh, I wish I had a really good camera so that I could capture this. And I just realized, even if I had a great camera, there are not words, there's no lens, there's nothing that I could use right now that could capture the glory and the beauty of this moment as I'm with dear friends in this beautiful place. And so we were made for life abundant. So as God comes to Adam and Eve in the cool of the night, and he realizes, and not that he wasn't aware of this, but he realizes they're hiding, they've disobeyed. It's really interesting that what he tells them is that essentially death has now entered the story. What he says to Adam is, you will still bring forth fruit from the soil, but it's with thorns and thistles. You will fight thorns and thistles all the days of your life. And to Eve, he says, you'll still give birth to children, but it'll be with great pain that happens. And so it's this picture of life and death are intricately woven together this side of the garden.
Wow.
And so through that lens, when our hearts are wired for this transcendent beauty and connection where we are naked and know no shame that causes us to hide, where we are intimately connected to the beauty of creation. This side of the garden, we experience life and death. So anytime that we experience tragedy or trauma of any kind, whether that's disappointment, failure, rejection, that's something that just simply the human heart is not wired to experience. And so I think it's an important thing to any conversation about mental health to have just kind of that as a foundation that, okay, we experience things that we're not made for. Yeah. And so then the question is, what are we to do with that? What does health look like, as you're asking? And so just as very broad categories, when I think about what does a healthy person look like? Because like Ryan has said, the goal is not to not feel sadness, but what do we do with that sadness? These are very oversimplified categories, but I think about the ability to be present, the ability to have emotional openness, and the ability to have clarity.
So the ability to be present, the ability to have emotional openness, and the ability to have clarity.
Yeah, so let me unpack that just a little bit. So with presence, gosh, we live so much of our lives stuck in the past or held hostage by the future, where we're haunted by something that's happened in our past and we live in constant regret, hiding from that, wanting to bury the things that have happened in our past. Hmm. Or so hyper-focused on the future, worried about what's going to happen to me, that we are disconnected from what's happening here. And now, in this moment. And ultimately, I think the biggest thing that robs us from is the ability to connect with others. again, we are wired to connect. And there are a lot of things that keep that from happening.
Yeah. I was just thinking when you were telling that story about being in Colorado, just how the word that came to my mind was how present you were in that moment when it kind of took your breath away. And you're not thinking about like, oh, I got taxes or I got, right. You know, you weren't thinking about all these other things. It's like you were really connected into this moment, this place and time.
Yeah. It's like when in our lives, because I just feel like we're in such this fast-paced society, right, where we're multitasking and we have more technology than we ever had. So we're watching TV while we're texting. But when do we fully feel connected to ourselves and as we're connected to ourselves, connected to God and connected to others? You have to be present in the moment in order for any of those things to happen.
Yeah. And there's so much in our world and in society that disconnects us.
Yes.
Especially for students, I would think. I mean, all the anxiety and stress and school and sports and pressure with, you know, social things and all these things they're experiencing kind of for the first time in a lot of ways. It can be pretty overwhelming.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, Matt's talked about with his clients too, just seeing so much pressure, having so much on their plates these days with all the different courses and trying to balance social life. It's like being an adult, it's hard enough to balance all the plates. And now, kids are moving into their teenage years trying to balance all these different things for the first time. It can be overwhelming.
Yeah. So a healthy person is someone, or what we were designed for is to experience presence.
Yeah, to be available to what's going on here and now.
That's awesome.
Which is challenging. Mm-hmm. I mean, that means that you have to be good at experiencing the ups and the downs of life, which I think goes beautifully into the next part is emotional openness. And when I say that, I just simply mean you're able to feel everything, the sadness, the happiness, the elation, you're able to experience the dark and the light of the human experience. One of my favorite quotes speaks to this. It's by a guy named Thomas More. He says, "Tradition connects the soul to breath, both literal and metaphorical. You have a soul if you are breathing and show some signs of life. But you also need to breathe in a less literal way, taking life in and breathing it out, winning and losing, being happy and being sad, beginning a project and ending it, entering relationships and leaving them. This is the bittersweet rhythm of an engaged life, and it is a sign that you have a soul. But sometimes people get stuck and the rhythm stops. They can't take in the new possibilities, or they can't let go of old and tired patterns." So this even speaks back to what we were saying before about presence. And I love that idea of the bittersweet rhythm of an engaged life. And so, again, that's acknowledging there's life and there's death. And so to very oversimplify, I guess Ryan and I were exposed to this statement in grad school. Emotions, in many ways, they're like a tunnel. The way to get through them is to move into them. So like if you're traveling and you come to a tunnel and you stop in the middle of the tunnel because you don't know if what's going to happen on the other end, you're not going to get out of that tunnel.
Right.
And so what we often see with clients who are depressed or anxious is somewhere along the way, they get stuck. And that's even what Ryan was speaking to and kind of the piece about it's an inability to feel sadness. Emotions have a way of working themselves out if we allow them to come and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, similar to that with the emotional openness, I've also heard that sometimes, so emotions, when we don't know how to deal with them, it's like holding a beach ball underwater and we're having to use so much energy to stuff them down, to push them down. And the fatigue of doing that is often where the depression happens. Wow. It's rather than just letting them be, rather than just going through the other metaphor, rather than just going through the tunnels, which can be very scary, we spend all this energy avoiding going through. And that's where the stuckness can happen at times.
Yeah. And so maybe even to jump the gun on some practical steps, one of the things I often ask both clients and parents of adolescents is, what are the emotions that your family is good at expressing, and what are the emotions that your family doesn't do together? And even thinking, whether it's a teenager or a parent of a teenager, even asking, what about in the family that I grew up in? What emotions were we allowed to express, and what were the ones that were kind of left to yourself to have to deal
with? And that can be kind of a new concept that an individual can show kind of the same patterns that a family unit would show, or, you know, or that a family unit really does, how they interact and how things go and what emotions that they celebrate or what emotions they create space for will actually impact even an individual.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of us think that we're kind of – we make our own way in the world and we are who we are, and it can be kind of a maybe even a scary thought to think, oh no, I'm kind of a sum of – I'm more than just this, but partly I'm a sum of what I've grown up in.
Absolutely. That whole actions speak louder than words, what's modeled for us, because that's what we see. So how would we not, you know, respond to that or learn from that?
Yeah.
Well, and even just like the way that we raise our kids, you know, trying to teach them to behave well, we respond to the behavior that we want them to exhibit with rewarding them. And we respond to the behavior that we don't want them to exhibit by punishing them. And so this happens even emotionally. You know, say that as a child, you are feeling really sad about something, and all of the nonverbal communication is, hush, 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 put that away. Right, we don't do that here.
Right.
It's the same punishment reward thing. If a parent isn't able to connect with their child in that place, the child is not going to learn how to deal with those emotions.
Hmm. That's great.
And so then to wrap up the conversation, this expert conversation on what emotional health looks like, the last simple category I would offer is clarity. We are so good at lying to ourselves. This summer, Ryan and I were watching, we got into this stupid show, Tiny House Hunters. These people going out wanting to buy tiny homes, which if that's your thing, great.
Like 500.
Yeah, but it was wild. Like, it was wild to see people going out saying, like, yeah, I want to do this tiny house thing, live a simple life, under 500 square foot. My budget's $30,000. And then they start going and looking at the houses and go, well, this isn't big enough to put all my stuff in. I think I'm going to need one that's a little bit bigger. And like, we just started getting so frustrated. Like, you don't want to live in a tiny home. You just don't have enough money for a regular size
right,
home.
Right.
Which, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I want to live in a tiny home, but I want to keep all my stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Where's the jacuzzi?
And a really tiny jacuzzi.
Yeah. For my dog.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're just so good at lying to ourselves. And and I think in many ways, this is just a defense mechanism. Like, if we look at ourselves and honestly assess the mess that often we are at times, that leaves us asking, like, what is this going to mean for me to actually have to deal with this?
Hmm.
And what will happen, maybe more importantly, what will happen to my relationships? What will happen to those around me if they see me for the mess that I am? This even goes back to that, the whole shame thing, which maybe it's worth differentiating guilt and shame. Guilt is something that you feel when I've done something wrong. Shame is there's something wrong with me.
Hmm.
And so we so often lack clarity. And so I think a healthy person is either A, able to begin practicing telling yourself the truth about what your experience is, or put yourself in a position where you're talking with someone, interacting with someone who's going to help you look at things. I mean, Ryan and I both still go to counseling, and our counselor often says to us, we're trees in our own forest. There's just some things about our lives and our stories that we're going to just have such a narrow, rigid view on.
Blind spots.
Yeah, just blind spots.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think a healthy person is to some degree able to see with clarity, yeah, I'm not doing so well right now. I might need to do something about this. Or, yeah, I've noticed that I get really angry about this one thing. I wonder why that is.
Hmm.
So being able to be present, having some kind of emotional openness and clarity.
And all of those, you know, as we talk about a picture of health, incorporate, like you said, some type of understanding or integrating a vision of like life and death good and bad and positive and negative and being kind of okay with dealing with them. Not feeling like you have to only focus on the positive and the good things, but being able to express both joy and sadness, kind of a fully – you're just fully living life as it comes, I guess.
The full range of life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Knowing that we were designed in God's image, but we also live in this very – broken, hard world. And so there's goodness and there is suffering. You know, we can't have a mountaintop without a valley. It's kind of this yin and yang thing. Or, you know, bright colors don't look as full if there aren't dark colors to go with them.
Mm. And I think maybe to take a subtle right or left turn off the beaten path just a little bit. I think as Christians, there can even be in the Christian culture something that's challenging around this because I think somehow it can get wrapped up into what does it say about God if I'm a Christian who's following him and my life isn't going well? Hmm. And so there, I think I often see and experience this idea that, well, praise and worship only means the good stuff. Hmm. And so in some ways, I think we would both say that we see the Christian faith at times is used to lie to ourselves about, no, actually, life is really hard. And what if the Psalms are actually true, that half of praise and worship is lament and saying, what in the world is going on right now?
I was about to say, like, Psalms show a much different view of how to approach that.
And trusting that God's shoulders are big enough to handle those big questions that we right. have, like, well, God, I feel like I'm seeking you with all of my heart and my life is just a mess.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do with that, but I'm just going to be truthful to myself and to you and to those around me that life is hard and I don't have to act like I'm blessed.
Yeah, right. That's awesome. Matt, after you talked a little bit about what health looks like, you gave us a really, really helpful acronym for just talking about depression.
Mm-hmm.
Could you go back through that?
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing. It's SIGGCAPS.
SIGGCAPS.
SIGGECAPS.
Yes. One G.
If you could, oh, just one G.
Just
all
one
right.
G.
One G. Okay.
So when we're talking about SIGGCAPS, we're talking about sleep, interest, guilt, energy, concentration, appetite, psychomotor issues, and suicidality. So let me kind of break those down.
Okay.
So if you're wondering, is my adolescent child depressed, or is my friend depressed, or am I experiencing depression? These are just some of the symptoms that you can be kind of looking for. So with depression, we often see that it affects sleep. When we're depressed, it's often hard to want to get out of bed. It can even affect our ability to get sleep. So it can be restless sleep throughout the night and then just not ever wanting to get up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that makes this a little bit tricky with adolescence is during adolescence, which is a long period of life, it's actually considered age 12 to 22, so 13 years of transition.
Yeah.
In many ways, our system is rebooting and rewiring. And so the circadian rhythms during this time of life are resetting. And so when adolescents don't want to get up in the morning to go to school or whatever, that doesn't necessarily mean that, oh, no, they're depressed or, oh, they're just
right.
being lazy.
Right.
Some of it could be just their body is resetting and figuring out how to adjust.
Right.
But so with that, be aware of sleep, but also it's helpful to be looking into some of these other things. So so that sleep is the S.
Going back to that real quick, it could look like never feeling like getting enough sleep.
Yeah.
Or having a lot of trouble falling asleep, you know, either not getting enough or you see a drastic change where they're just constantly sleeping and can't get enough. And again, it goes back to that idea that depression is this common cold. And for us all, colds can look different. And so these symptoms that Matt's going to go through can vary, can be a little
and
nuanced.
If someone's just showing one of them and it's kind of early, or if it, you know, yeah, like you're saying, if they're, you know, part of adolescence is this kind of changing in your sleep. You need more sleep. Some people get maybe less sleep, but it's not necessarily something to kind of freak out about, but it's just something to keep in mind. If they start showing one of these like really strongly, or if they start showing like multiple of these,
exactly,
that at that point it'd be maybe good to look into getting some professional help, or just to talk more with your student about what's going on.
Yeah, and Ryan will kind of, I think, give some really good practical steps and tools for even how to talk to your kid in a few minutes. And yeah, I think even just having these different categories, even just kind of being mindful of and watching for those and noticing, okay, well, yeah, my kid is really sleepy. And am I seeing some of these other things going on?
Cool. I
think is a really good thing to just practice being aware of.
Right. So Siggy Caps, S is sleep. What was I?
I is interest. So when you're thinking about this, just think about do the things that normally bring me life, do they still bring me life? Do I still enjoy playing the sport that I have? Do I still enjoy participating in the arts that I've participated in? Do the things that energize me and motivate me, are they still doing that? Or am I just kind of sluggish and blah about everything? Is everything just kind of muted and whatever. I'll go, but it's not the same. I don't really enjoy it.
Right.
I guess the term for this, or a term for this, is anhedonia. So the opposite of hedonism, which is where we just ravagely take in things and enjoy them and get life to the fullest. With anhedonia, it's just kind of, nothing is really doing it for me anymore.
Lack of interest.
Lack of interest. The G is for guilt. And so with this, that can look like a lot of things. It can look like just a sense of hopelessness, or a sense of there's something wrong with me, or I just lack of self-esteem. I don't like myself. I don't measure up to my friends and the other kids at my school, which, I mean, gosh, again, this is one of those things I think is just so normal. Such a normal part of adolescent development, because in many ways, during the adolescent years, we're asking, who am I? Where do I belong? In a second, I'll talk a little bit about just some adolescent development in terms of how we're seeing ourselves and others. So we're asking so many of these identity questions, and what adolescent doesn't at some point compare themselves to another and go, oh, I'm not up to snuff. There is something wrong with me.
Right. Yeah, I think the guilt, what I often see is there's just this sense of worthlessness. I don't measure up. I don't feel like I have much to offer. Even feeling guilt for struggling. Again, I'm feeling such a lack of interest. I can't sleep. What's wrong with me?
Mm. Yeah. So that was G.
Yep.
So now we have E.
So E, we have energy. So this kind of goes back to a little bit to the sleep thing, a little bit to the interest thing. Just kind of like, I just picture an adolescent just kind of sliding around, like not even taking steps, but just kind of they're sliding like a sloth around, just no energy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess with this, it's worth saying that a lot of this can even be summed up in, is your kid just kind of moving to isolation?
Hmm.
Are they only ever just going to their room and not connecting with people?
Hmm.
That can kind of embody a lot of these things. But with depression, we see that there's just not energy to do things. There's not energy to get out and be around other people. And it goes back to just the whole, you're tired all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I can physically see it on my high school clients where it almost seems like they're wearing a backpack that's too heavy. And the things that they used to enjoy require too much energy. Relationships require too much energy. Like Matt said, there's such a tendency. The big theme you'll see with depressive symptoms is a movement towards isolation.
Hmm.
Because, relating to others, doing things, having that energy just requires too much. There becomes this paralysis.
And so not only that, but it can also affect the C, your concentration. So often, like if someone is depressed, and especially middle school and high school, they may start seeing fluctuation in their grades, because it's not just I don't have energy, but it can affect your ability to concentrate and really pay attention to what's going on.
Have clarity.
And have clarity of thinking. So it can affect your concentration, your energy. A is for appetite. It can affect your appetite to where you're just not hungry, which even goes back to the interest thing. Like, food is, I think, meant to be a pleasurable thing. And so if nothing is pleasurable,
right,
why would you eat?
Right,
and so
it
can affect your appetite, both to the point where you're not eating or where you're going to be eating more than normal in extreme amounts. But more often than not, wouldn't you say, Ryan, that it affects it in the way that you just don't want to eat?
Right, right. That whole, you can see how all the different things are interrelated.
And nothing sounds good.
Yeah, nothing sounds good. Everything is very gray, blah, weighty. You know, even eating can take up too much energy.
Hmm.
And so, I mean, you do see at times people overeating or weight gain, that kind of thing, which you might be getting to. But mostly it's that lack of, goes back to that lack of interest, lack of energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have sleep, interest, guilt, energy, concentration, appetite. Now, what's P?
Psychomotor issues.
Psychomotor issues. Okay.
You're going to be a counselor by the end of this year.
I love
Jared.
That on the P for an acronym, they made the P silent. That just it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So psychomotor issues.
And so with this it kind of just goes back to that blahness of life. Just you're not going to have a whole lot of expression, just very flat affect. So like tone of voice, you won't really have any movement, fluctuation in your voice, not a lot of expression in your face. You can see it. You can see depression. We wear it in the form of just there's no, very little to no expression.
A physical heaviness. It's that Eeyore. Everything requires energy, and so it's slower. So if you notice your student, your child just lacking life, you know, and the flatness of the face, the slower movements, those are things to pay attention
to. It's probably one of those things that's hard to even describe as much as it is. Like, when you see it, you'll know it.
Yes.
You know, especially parents who know their children, like, they can tell, like, when they, maybe it's even hard to describe, like, they just seem down or they just seem different, like
how
something has changed.
Right. How are you experiencing your child and using that parental intuition to notice what shifts are going on?
Yeah, you talked a little bit about parental intuition. That, I think, is really powerful. And like, trust your instinct, you know, trust your judgment in a sense of when to kind of dive deeper into something.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think this is where I think is probably worth saying, if you're wondering, if you have questions or uncertainty, that may be where it's worth talking to someone, consulting with a mental health professional, and just saying, hey, here are the things that I'm seeing. I really hope that my kid's not depressed. And even going back to the clarity thing, like, what parent wants to say, yeah, my kid's depressed. I'm happy about that. Let's deal with it. It's a lot easier to say, like, oh, no, things are okay. Because as a parent, like, oh, no, what does it say about me that little Johnny is depressed? I must have done something wrong.
Right.
Yeah, it can be really scary as a parent. And so I think the biggest role for parents is just to, again, pay attention to the intuition, notice the shifts, also know that you, unless you're a licensed mental health counselor, you're not supposed to know, you know, whether your child's depressed or not.
Right.
Don't take on that burden. You know, talk to other people. Let your child, engage your child, but also take them to a professional because, you know, don't carry that burden.
Right.
If you
don't try
have
to do this all alone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, if depression's all about isolation, don't combat isolation with more isolation.
Right.
Yeah, and even the really difficult thing about depression, the last S is suicidal. This is one of the symptoms that comes with depression is that you can start beginning to have those thoughts and questions of, do I want to continue living? If I decided not to, what would that look like? What would it be to not live anymore? How would I go about killing myself?
Hmm.
Not everyone who's depressed is suicidal, but that's certainly one of the symptoms that can come with depression.
Of course, yeah.
And it can be varying degrees to, you know, something, again, just different degrees of a cold, different degrees of depression. It can look like, oh, I just don't want to get out of bed anymore. I feel hopeless. It would be easier if things were over. Or it can be more active, like Matt was saying, where it's, I'm done, like life is just too hard, and, you know, active plans of suicide, which again, for a parent, can be so, so scary.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so with that, I do think that it's helpful to a little bit try to distinguish. And again, this is there is so much gray to all of this, but to try a little bit to distinguish, okay, so what's the difference between being sad and being depressed? What's the difference between, like, hey, this is normal, and hey, this is probably something we need to deal with and address?
Yeah.
And so I guess two broad categories I'd offer to this are when it's starting to become depression, something that probably needs to be dealt with, there's going to be some level of dysfunction. And by that, I mean thinking about the way that we engage with the world. So there's going to be dysfunction in how I'm going about my life. So I might start seeing issues with grades. I might start seeing issues in relationships. It's going to manifest itself in the environment that I'm living in. So for an adolescent, it's going to show up in school. It's going to show up in relationships. It's going to show up in teams, sports, the things I'm involved in.
Right. So a student who, you know, has always had no problem getting straight A's suddenly starts bringing home not just like, you know, a B, but like suddenly grades really start slipping, you know, to a point where it's very different from before. Mm-hmm. Or a student who loved baseball suddenly doesn't want to have almost anything. Not just that he kind of has new interest, but just a big shift of like, that's not,
just kind of retreating from life.
Right.
Which
right.
goes back to the whole interest thing. Like, I'm just not interested in things anymore.
And generally you'll see it in a couple of realms of life, right? So like you were saying, you know, straight A's and it's dropping significantly. Generally, it won't just be in grades. I mean, that's a red flag to pay attention to, but you'll also see it with the sports or the friendships. You'll see it in multiple, on multiple different planes.
Okay.
And so that one's probably a little bit easier to see and be aware of. The one that's a little bit more, just a little trickier is the second category, is that it's personally distressing. It's going to bring despair to the life of the person who's going through it. And so this for parents is a little bit harder because you can't quite see the physical fruit of it as much with this. But this is where it goes back to, yeah, I see that even though maybe they're not even wanting to talk about, I see that there's just a weight that they're carrying and that there's something that's just really weighing them down, that there is despair that I see within them. Mm-hmm. So it affects it. We can see it showing up in the way we interact with our environment, but also in just what's going on inside of us intrapersonally.
Gotcha.
So those are when parents ask, so how do I know, is my kid just sad and kind of going through something that's a phase, or is this something to be concerned about? Those are the things I'm kind of trying to ask. Are there interpersonal, how I'm engaging with the world, or intrapersonal, just what's going on within my person?
That's great. I think that's a good place to stop for today. But next month, Matt and Ryan will be back with us, and we'll be covering more about how you can best respond to depression when you see signs of it in your student. But until then, thanks for listening to Let's Chat Parenting. If you'd like more information, you can go to orangewood.org/Let's Chat. There you can get more info on upcoming Let's Chat events if you're in the Orlando area, or upcoming Let's Chat podcast episodes. We'll see you then.